Blog Talk Radio.
Immediately when I started to take a look at the amount of intervention, let's say, that happened in our human history, and I was channeling this and remote viewing these ancient human history timelines, I was pissed. I was so angry. I'm like, what? No way. Like, that's not okay. Like, they can't just do that. Now, Jesus, I believe his soul was an ascended master, mm-hmm. and the bloodline of the body was very Palladian. So he kind of had that mix of both. And then, of course, his teachings got extremely skewed further mm-hmm. down the line. The one time I connected with Jesus as an ascended master, just in my meditation, I didn't expect it. And, you know, his purpose to bring to planet Earth, to incarnate here, was to embody absolute unconditional love. And with that embodiment, and unconditional love isn't like, I love you unconditionally. It's not that romanticized bullshit, honestly. It's a vibrational frequency that is of the highest vibration. Mm-hmm. And in that frequency, that's where you can turn water into wine. That's where you can create fish out of nothing. That's where you can walk on water, because he was essentially defying the laws of physics while he was around, simply because he was in a much, much higher vibration. And I believe, and what he was trying to teach us all, is that we can all embody that vibration, and we can all defy the laws of physics, classical physics. Like, for example, if I wanted to stick my hand through this wall, I could.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
Yes.
That was this April, and she was talking about
yes.
Jesus and what he could do. 1 second. Okay. So did you hear what she had to say?
Well, yes, I could hear that bit.
Okay. What do you think?
About pushing your hand through the wall. Yes.
Well, go ahead.
Well, it's a simple story of, if you take a jug, and you fill it with marbles, glass marbles.
Uh-huh.
And you say, okay, you fill it right to the top of the jug. You can't get another marble in, right?
Right.
But you can still add to that a pint of water.
Of course.
Or however much. In other words, there's always spaces between spaces throughout the universe. On all levels, there is always a space between any two things.
Of course.
So there's always room for more.
I see. Okay. Well, listen, I just wanted to, we had talked on many subject matters, and we haven't talked in a long time. And basically, just tell us how you're doing. You know, you've been around here, if I may, a couple of years, 85 years, and you work with George Green, and you were married to him, what, 15 years?
Yes.
And you helped him complete his project, right? Do you think he had completed his project when he left a couple of years ago?
No, he felt he had more work to do, but maybe not. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I thought he was done, but...
Well, you were with him a long time, and you helped him.
Yes.
And you went to many
yes.
of those conferences with him, right? And coached them? Yes?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, you didn't coach?
I went to the conferences sometimes in company with George before we were married. But after we were married, I never went with him.
Oh, you did not?
No. Well, the only ones I ever went to with George were the UFO conferences in Loughlin when we were on our way somewhere else.
I see.
No, the ones that George went to after we were married, he generally went alone.
I see. You didn't. I mean, you knew a lot of those people, you know, Stanton Friedman and Linda Mutenhauer,
yes.
or Eisenhower.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But
but I knew them long before I was married to George.
I see.
I knew George and would meet him at the conferences sometime for 30 years before we were married.
I see. So basically, by the time you married him, you had heard most of his story.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. All right. But then you...
And I supported... I always supported the work George did. You know, would try to help him in any way I could, but...
Sure.
He was pretty independent, George. He didn't really want other people's help. He wanted to do his own thing.
I see.
Quite rightly. you know, quite rightly.
So he was an independent soul, if you will, in terms of that.
Yeah.
Well, look, for the people who want to see George or hear George, they can always go to the YouTube channels. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he left the website, which is nohoax.net. And a lot of his information is still there. And so,
yes.
And you wrote three books, The Return of the Anunnaki, ETA, and Violent Flame. So those books are there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So are you going to write anything else in the next 2 or 3 years before you leave the planet, you think?
I shouldn't think so. I doubt it.
No?
No, I don't think so.
You think you have left enough for humanity to chew on, if you will?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily my job. You know, I think it's the job of every new generation to find things out for themselves. So although I am an avid reader and like to read material, I read it as either for enjoyment, you know, both historical and fictional material, but reading it just for enjoyment. For enlightenment purposes, I see it more as serving to give me ideas, not teach me something. And I think that really is my view of literature generally, if it's informative literature, that it's intended not to tell us what we should believe, but to trigger our thinking with ideas that might help us think for ourselves. My whole thing is that people need to think for themselves. They need to learn to choose everything for themselves. Although we are all one in the greater context, we are also given the gift on this planet Earth and virtually nowhere else to be individuals, to be separate from everybody else. That's the great beauty of planet Earth, is the fact that every soul is separate. So although it keeps us apart in many ways, it gives us the greatest opportunity in this universe, because it doesn't really happen anywhere else, certainly not to the degree as it does on Earth. And here we are free from other people's mind-connected influence to make our own choices. And this is the whole purpose of life, to meet everything that we draw to ourselves or everything that comes in front of us, whichever way you see it, it doesn't matter, right? Whatever you meet in your life, you have to make a choice with regard to it. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, an emotional, a mental, a spiritual, it doesn't matter what it is. You always are having to make choices. Every day of your life, you're making choices.
Certainly.
And it's that process of choosing that leads to enlightenment and understanding, and eventually hopefully some wisdom. We hopefully end up getting some wisdom out of it.
But often people say that we are all connected too.
We are.
Okay.
We're all one. Spirit is all one, right? You know, the one, right? But it's the one divided into individual units of self-individualization. So, yes, we are one, but we are also individuals. And as individuals, when you are part of the whole, you can't think of it this way. Supposing you're in a party of people, and there are 30 people on a bus tour, and you're going to a vacation, Los Angeles. Let's say you're going on a bus tour with 30 people to Los Angeles. Once you're all on that bus on that same vacation, you no longer have any individual choice, because the tour is already arranged, that you have to go X, Y, and Z where everybody else is going, because it's a group tour. So you have to travel as one, right? But when you get off the bus and you go home, you are separate individuals again and can make choices for yourself.
Yep.
So while you're on the bus tour, to eat the chicken dinner that's been arranged for the group.
So
but when you go home, you can change that.
Right. Let's talk about the individual. When we say that being on planet Earth as a human being, that you have incarnated right. into the body of a human being for many, many times, many, many decades. What's the advantage of being a human being as contrast to being a Palladian or reptilian or gray or whatever? What's the advantage?
Well, there are two main benefits to being a human on Earth as apart from the rest of the human family throughout the universe. And I don't know that much about them as individuals in the rest of the aliens. I'm not that familiar with all the other aliens, but I do understand about the humans that they have two great influences that affect them on planet Earth. One is the fact that because we do not use mental telepathy as a common means of communication, we are more isolated from each other than any other species that I know about in the universe. I've never come across such a disconnected species as Homo sapiens sapiens. And this means that we have this separation allows us to be free, mentally and emotionally free, to make definitively our own choices. The amount of influence that other people have by telling us things, you know, talking to us, persuading us, conditioning us, whatever, that's still outside of us. In the final analysis, nobody else is in our head, and we make the final choices for ourselves. So that is an advantage which I don't know anywhere else in the universe exists, right? And the other thing, of course, is that we were the primary group of people genetically altered by the Anunnaki all those hundreds of thousands of years ago. Well, they finished it 30, 40,000 years ago. And in that process, they put into us two of the Anunnaki genes. And in recent years, lots of people, or most people who read this material at all, know Zachariah Sitchin. They know that all he basically did was translate material that is extant on the planet about the time the Anunnaki were living on this planet, were developing the humans on this planet, and were developing the Sumerian civilization in the Middle East and spreading things about a bit in the world. So Sitchin's books, and he's written many of them, 13, 14, 15, I don't know how many, but all of them except the last couple were simply translations of tablets, clay tablets, artifacts, documents, buildings, things inscribed on buildings, things that exist on our planet today that are physically real and are historical evidence of what actually was going on, right? So this evidence is all there, and this came from a man called Zachariah Sitchin, who published his books from the 70s onwards. Well, he died 2-3 years ago now, and it was a great loss, I think, because he was a wonderful scholar. And since he died, there have been dozens, literally, on YouTube and all these other, you know, platforms, I think they call them, and people writing books and writing material, all based on Sitchin's work to some extent, I am sure, but telling all kinds of stories about the Anunnaki. And not one of them is telling the right story. And the reason they're not telling the right story is because they contradict themselves. They all tell you, as Sitchin did, and as he had documentary evidence of, the Anunnaki were the ones spoken of in the Bible as the fallen angels. We're doing something today we've never done before, Russell. We're clarifying this situation once and for all, right? Sitchin shows the documentary evidence extant on the planet today that tells you these were the ones described in the Bible as the fallen angels. Who were the fallen angels? The fallen angels were angelic beings of God, angels sent down from the source to supervise or to observe, really, to observe what the Creator had created in the third dimension. They came down 22 levels from the source of light to see what was going on in the creation. About two-thirds of them went back to report to the boss, right, to this source, the Creator. And the other third, who disagreed with what was going on, right, maybe because they were too egotistical, I don't know, but whatever reason, they stayed in the creation, and they never left it.
Right.
Now, what happens in all this new literature that's being written about them, the Anunnakis, most of them are saying they're bad, there's everything wrong with them, blah, 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 right? Which may or may not be true. I'm not disputing that, right? What I am saying is that not one writer seems to understand the basic principle that the Anunnaki were never beings that evolved out of the creation. They were beings of light, angelic beings who came down into the creation. So they talk about all this, oh yes, it's Yahweh, it's Jehovah, which it is. Jehovah was Enlil, right? They talk about all this stuff down here on the planet and how the gods walked in the garden and did all the things that the Bible tells you they did and so on. And they acknowledge that this is correct. And then they say that the fact that they put genes into humans made no difference except it screwed us up somewhat. Medically speaking, which it did, the genetic engineering was faulty and it needs correcting and it is in process of being corrected. However, they are completely missing the point of what this did for humanity.
Okay.
This is important, Russell, I have to say it.
Yep.
By putting in Anunnaki genes into the human genome, they took out four of the human genes.
Let's say, okay. Yeah. All right. You've been talking for a while. April, you listened to Elizabeth April, have you not?
Yes, I've listened. Oh. Yes.
Well, here's what she has to say about that.
Immediately when I started to take a look at the amount of intervention, let's say, that happened in our human history, and I was channeling this and remote viewing these ancient human history timelines, I was pissed. I was so angry. I'm like, what? No way. Like, that's not okay. Like, they can't just do that. Now, granted, we did evolve. So I went to the Galactic Federation, this is like 10 years ago, and I'm like, yo, guys, come on. Like, you have all these resources, you have all of this technology, and you didn't stop them from making us slaves for how many years? Hundreds of thousands of years? Like, what? And they always laugh at me when I get upset because it's a very human reaction, right? Like, it's like my human coming through. Yeah. And they explained to me, they said, we've been aware of every different species, civilization, being to manipulate Earth or manipulate human beings, whether it be in a physical way, energetic way. And they said, we only allow what is contracted to happen. And essentially, by saying that, they implied that everything that took place with the Anunnaki was contracted to happen because what did they do? They evolved us hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, in a matter of a short period of time. And yes, they taught us math. They taught us astrology, astronomy. They taught us sacred geometry. You know, they gave us art. They gave us a lot of stuff. And there was a really interesting point in the evolution when they were working with human beings, and they were very hesitant to allow this like species that they created to evolve on their own. And what I mean by that is they were very hesitant to allow us to breed with each other. So they actually didn't allow us to have babies for a very long time. So there was like, I think, three generations that they worked with. So generation one and generation two of their hybrid from the Neanderthals, they basically didn't allow us to procreate.
Did they procreate with us?
Okay, so yes. So because they basically wanted population control, because they knew that if they could control that, then they would be always in charge. And so what happened was by Gen 3, they were kind of sick and tired. They didn't have the resources anymore to create us one by one by hand to kind of keep the population going. So they then created the next generation, which was we were able to procreate with each other. The Anunnaki ended up falling in love with the female humans quite often, actually. And so they started to procreate with the female humans, this you know, hybrid species that they created, and they started to create babies together. And in ancient Greece, like I also went back into ancient Greek times, mm-hmm. and they were considered the demigods, right? So the Anunnaki were considered the gods, and the creation between the gods and the humans were considered the demigods. So they weren't necessarily 20, 30 feet tall. They were more so 10 feet tall.
Okay. I just wanted you to hear some of that because you say there's so many shades of the story of what the Anunnaki did in terms of creating the human being.
What Elizabeth April is saying there is not a shade of a story. It's part of the same story.
Oh, I see.
And what she is saying is correct.
I see.
And what she's talking about at the end with the Greeks is the time, and it wasn't the Greeks because they weren't in existence then, although the Greeks did subsequently have them as their demigods, that's true. But the demigods were people like Gilgamesh. You know the story of Gilgamesh, right? And he was the king of the city of Ur, where Abraham came from.
Okay.
So she's not telling something different. She's telling a piece of the same story. First of all, I have to finish what I was saying, even though you cut me off, right? Because you've cut off the important piece. When they put in two genes into the human genome, two of their own genes, remember who I said they were. They were beings at the beginning. They did not come out of the creation. They came into the creation as fully enlightened eternal beings, immortal beings. They are immortals. And they gave us the gene of immortality. It's because of that gene work that they did. Not only did they move us forward millions of years and so on and so forth in evolutionary process, they left us with immortality genes. And because of that, every single person on planet Earth who is an Earth human has a potential for immortality, which other beings do not have.
Fine,
and that's
fine.
Why they want to mix with us
fine.
All the time.
But if
now,
I may.
When to go... well,
if I may,
okay.
But they took away, or they didn't give us the ability for mental telepathy, for remote viewing, for extrasensory perception, etc. They didn't let us have that on for eons. Only a few happened to have that if they were to work at it and focus on it, but the general population, they don't have those skills that I just mentioned. The general population.
Well, because they haven't developed them.
Yeah, but
that's
nobody. But that's been hidden. It's like. It's,
why would we want to develop them?
I'm sorry.
They're not necessary. They're not necessary.
But then.
So
on.
Why would we want to develop them?
Because
why would you?
It expands your awareness of other entities who are visiting us, be it
okay.
the Greys, the Reptilians, the Palladians, the Arcturians. I can go on and on. I mean, there are a lot of species.
But yes, there are. And how many of them would you like to be like?
Well,
how many of the species that come to this planet and do things like, you know, cattle mutilations,
abductions.
Why would you want to be like them?
You're asking me?
Yeah, why would you want to be like them?
Oh, there are a thousand reasons. I don't want to. I'm asking you the questions today. I'm not being interviewed. But anyway, so what do you think a human being has to work on between now and the end? What do you think?
Between now and I think that they have to work on themselves as individuals. The human race is different to most other races in the universe. It has potentials that many other races do not have, despite not being telepathic, right? The human race is a brilliant race, It's advanced in 6,000 years, more than most races have advanced in 6,000 years or 6 million years. The other races have only got technology ahead of us. There are a few out there who are
purely
spiritual, are way beyond.
But
we
don't
of,
know all
right?
of the entities in the vastness of the universe. We know some.
No, we don't know them all.
Right, okay.
But what we do know is that the human race is a brilliant race with vast potential.
But some people say they're controlled by AI. Some people say they are controlled by the matrix, that they really don't have individual thought and choice because they have all these other, they've been dumbed down so low. That's what some people are saying. Any comment?
Well, it's probably true. Oh. It's probably true. Most people, and that's why I'm saying they need to think for themselves. That when you ask me what do they need to do between now and the end of this cycle, it's start thinking for themselves.
Right,
because most people are brainwashed.
Okay.
They stick their earphones in their ears and bombard their brains with music and all kinds of stuff. I don't know what they put in their heads.
Okay.
They teach kidcation, which is not worth having for the most part, and is mostly built on fairy stories, to be polite about it.
Of course. Well, William Thompson says that in his book.
But, yeah, it is lies.
That we all been educated in the wrong fashion.
Exactly.
Okay.
But that's what's been put into them. The human being as a brain is capable of almost anything.
Uh-huh.
And what we know it's capable because Christ said so. Right? If for no other reason, right? Christ performed miracles in front of thousands of people and then said to his followers, you can do this too.
All right. So, but...
And that's what every human being is capable of.
Okay, that's in John 14, 12.
The fact that they don't do it, the fact that they don't have all these frequencies, skills, it's just because they've never bothered to do it. Not because they can't.
Well, don't you think they've been programmed not to in many instances in terms of the educational systems, be it college or universities or high school, grade?
Well, yes, Russell, but you're just talking about one lifetime. You're just talking about this lifetime.
But most people concerned about this lifetime.
You have to understand that every lifetime you live is built on the back of the lifetimes you've already had.
Okay.
You don't live a life, learn something, die, and forget it all.
Okay. How many lifetimes do you think you've been here?
As a human, as an Earth human reincarnating?
Yes.
Maybe somewhere between 12 and 20.
Okay. Most people, I would say, they don't have any recognition, any remembrance of being here at all. And they... fumbling and stumbling around here like lost sheep, the blind leading the blind. Now, I don't remember ever having been here on this planet called Earth. So how about people like me?
Well, just because you don't remember something doesn't mean it never happened.
Okay. How can I get help remembering? How can I get help in remembering?
You help yourself. Help yourself by do some spiritual practice, by opening your mind, by taking quiet time, by using your God-given brains and thinking about what you know. The universe is reasonable and it's logical. There's nothing illogical ever in the universe, in any time in history. So if you just think about the things you already know, Even if you've only learned it secondhand from, you know, people like Elizabeth April or me or somebody like that, stuff that you've heard, if you sit and actually think about what you're hearing, instead of wanting to respond to it or react to it or to choose to believe it or not believe it, if you want to make conclusions and decisions about it, you're never going to get very far because every time you make a conclusion or decision, a belief, in other words, then you're closing the doors.
Yeah, but
you're closing the doors to possibilities.
You got to help me out here. You got to help me, and not only me, but people I know and the millions of people that I see and come in contact with. I mean, the thousands, if you will. They need help. They don't have a plan, if you will, of self-development. Most people don't even understand that. You mentioned John 14:12. They say, all the things I've done, you can do and more, and that's what Jesus told us. You know, the turning water into wine and helping the blind see.
Yes, but you know, Russell.
Yes.
Half the people who hear you or I say that are going to say, oh, well, I'm not a Christian, so that doesn't apply. In other words, they're not using their common sense, right? That's the thing. That everybody's got the same brain in their head, pretty much. Everybody has a basic potential of what they are capable of learning. And now some people are smarter than others. Some people have more active brains than others. Some people have brains that think artistically. Some have brains that think mathematically. That's true. Our brains are processors, and they all work in different ways because we're individuals. But when the mind puts something into the brain, we can take the time to trouble to process it. And most people can't be bothered to process what is. You can spoon feed somebody for 1,000 years, and if they don't want to take the time and trouble to think about it until they understand
I just have a problem with saying pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You have all this information at your fingertips, but you're not using it. Because when I look at the school system...
What do you mean I'm not? What
I'm
do you
not
mean
saying
I'm
you,
not
I mean,
using
I mean
it?
You. I mean you as a...
Anybody.
Yes.
What do you mean by they're not using it?
How can you begin to help people to raise their awareness from, say, the third dimension to the fifth dimension? How can you help them do that? What would you suggest for they do?
Well, first of all, uh-huh. I would say that's not my job.
Okay. But you don't have any suggestions? Okay, fine.
Yes, I do have
Jesus,
suggestions.
Krishna, Buddha, Baha'u'llah, those individuals tried, when you look at the monks, the people who ascended masters, they always came with a message to help people improve and advance, right?
Yes, and they said what they wanted to say.
Uh-huh.
I say what I want to say, right? And I hope, and I've done this my whole life. It's been
Thank
my
you.
Life's work, right?
Yep.
I hope somebody listened and learned. But it's not my job to do their enlightening
fine.
For them.
Fine.
Because enlightenment, like salvation, it's a do-it-yourself program.
I think
you
that
cannot learn.
People need direction. That's why they have. That's why they go to the church. Well, that's why the
yes.
Catholic, the Protestant.
And exactly, and see what that's done for them.
Okay,
you
fine.
Said the wrong thing to me there because...
Okay, and you may be right, but I'm just saying they go to those church congregations, those meetings, because they're looking for instructions and guidance and direction in terms of improving.
They're looking.
So, listen.
They are looking.
Yeah,
they're looking for
they
somebody
search
to
of,
tell them what to do.
I mean...
What does any church or any religion, except Buddhism and the Eastern religions, which are different, they're not religions, they are philosophers, right? But any religion which has a church, what does it do primarily? It sets up a set of rules that say definitively, absolutely definitively, who or what God is that one should be worshiping.
True.
And then the ritual by which you should worship that being.
True.
That prevents anybody from evolving.
I see.
Because somebody has told you what it is, and so there's no question anymore. No religion allows you to question it.
True.
They don't have an open forum in any church that I've ever heard of
right.
that allows you to question the tenets of their faith.
So
right?
you're saying, may I say this?
So what I'm saying...
You're saying at the Council of Nicene, when they decided to pull all those popes together... and then lay down that those dictums that we have to be guided by that, or that was all wrong. Help me with that. Help me with that.
No, I'm not saying it was all wrong.
Uh-huh.
What the two? Because you said the right words. You said to be guided by.
Right.
But when you are guided, what does a guidepost do? It points the direction. But what does a church do? It puts a dead end stop up. You're not guided by anything the church tells you because you're not allowed to question it. You're not allowed to find your way. You're not allowed to travel the path and see what's on the journey. Everything in every church I've ever read about is a dead end.
Okay.
Because it says, this is it and no more.
All right. So
you're not allowed to question.
Okay, fine. Then what? I was listening to April the other day about this whole thing about how to take your energy and your effort and your time and your space that you have and advance yourself, if you will. And I'm just asking you, what can others do? Listen to what April says. Let me just briefly.
Don and Aki were gone. They were like, okay, cool, we're leaving. We got what we wanted. They stayed for longer than they should have anyway. But the reptilians said to the Galactic Federation, absolutely not. We're not leaving. This is our planet. The human beings have no right to be here. They're the ones that need to be kicked off. And so the Galactic Federation went to their councils and they discussed it amongst themselves and said, well, they're not wrong. And I roll, because of the law of non-intervention, we actually can't push them off of their own planet because they do have a right to it. So what the Galactic Federation said is, okay, we've decided that we'll let you stay, but you cannot be seen by humans. And they thought, you cannot be influenced by humans if you can't be seen by humans. That's what they thought. So that was the contract that was created back then in ancient Egypt. So the Anunnaki left on their ships, and they went away, and they were happy. And the reptilians went underground, just like they did when the cataclysms happened with the dinosaurs.
Okay.
And while they were underground, they said, how do we influence human beings, still maintain control of human beings without being seen? And they started to create technology, and they started to work with the bloodlines. And the bloodlines were picking out certain individuals who have been very similar to the Anunnaki mixing with the humans. The reptilians were also mixing with the humans, creating these hybrids. And through those bloodlines, they were able to actually, like, basically what they can do is they can transport their consciousness, kind of like astral traveling, and move into the body of a human being who has higher than normal reptilian DNA. And in that way, they can fully take over the body and fully influence the body under their will, essentially kicking the original human soul out of the body, along with the technology that they have to kind of like holograph themselves. And that's kind of more recent technology, to holograph themselves to look like a human. And that's where they can shapeshift out of that human form. So since then is when they've been in full control. And it's kind of like a facepalm for the Galactic Federation to be like, we really should have worded that contract a different way. Yeah. However, once again, going up there and getting pissed at them, like, guys, come on. Like, who did you fire for this? Like,
somebody's going down for this one.
They told me once again, it was all a part of the contract, because what the reptilians have been doing and like shape-shifting and pretending to be humans and creating wars, quote-unquote, and like fear and just distraction and so much drama really on planet Earth, it is allowing human beings to see the darkest aspects of ourselves and the darkest aspects of the universe. And I really believe that the reptilian beings and also all the dark energy on planet Earth is kind of sticking their foot in their mouth, because by pushing so much fear and so much darkness, at a certain point in time, humans are going to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm just not going to watch the news anymore, because I have an anxiety attack every time I do. Like, literally, there's so much darkness that they're turning to the light on their own free will and volition, because they're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I get that. And 2020 to now is really showing us that we can make a higher vibrational choice.
Okay. I want to talk about the higher vibrational choice. How can you do it when you have AI, you have all these influences, subtle, covert and overt in your life? How do you escape that? How do you come out of the matrix is my question of you.
Well, I can only keep saying the same thing over again. And that is everybody should recognize that they are individual. But the truth is, Russell, that most people are not willing to change their reality. Okay. They simply aren't. It's like we know, for instance, that, food is highly contaminated in this day and age. But every individual could start growing their own food if they wanted to. There's nothing to stop anybody, except in very few circumstances, like a paraplegic who's dependent upon being in the hospital he lives in, right? Very few extreme circumstances or conditions of humanity where you cannot change your life, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. You have to choose for yourself, and you have to do the work, because nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody's going to come along and say, okay, I'll magically enlighten you, and then you will know all the information in the universe, or, I will magically cure all your illnesses for you so you don't have to start eating right and exercising. Or it doesn't matter what it is. Everything that exists in our lives is as a result of our own choice. Even the fact that we have a government that is corrupt, lies to us, and is dumbing us down all the time, because we chose that government. We elected them. We allowed the system. And this has gone on for thousands of years. This is not a new thing. The earth is in the state it's in because we put it here, nobody else. And those of us who have not learned because we haven't done the study, despite having many, many dozens of lifetimes in which to learn. We all choose each lifetime to learn or not learn.
You choose not to carry forward nothing. Let me address that one more time as we get near the end, because you said you have about a half an hour, and let's take another 5 minutes and close it out. I didn't want to keep you forever on this one. But for those individuals who have come to this planet voluntarily, right, many of whom don't even remember being anywhere else, in Andromeda, on Mars, or wherever in the universe, except they arrive here through the birth canal, the baby is born and struggles to walk and talk and eat and becomes independent, and that's very difficult. That's a whole battle in itself. That's a tough one. And then they get here, and they are guided by the school systems that we have put in place, the religions that are already in place, and so they are guided by a system psychologically, philosophically, educationally, emotionally, is already there. And all they wanted, and all they are asked to do is memorize what they've been taught and feed it back in the school systems of the world. That's not being independent, if I may. If I may.
No, it's not.
Okay. What would you offer? I mean, Saving Jesus or something. Go ahead.
That book, Saving Jesus, is a brilliant book, because it tells you the process by which you can actually learn how to do what Christ could do.
Okay.
So that book is brilliant. And if you're serious, then start reading it. And you will need to read it many, many times in order to really get it, because it's not an easy book to read. But it's simple in the way it's expressed. So anybody can read it and can learn from it if they're willing to devote the time and energy. The point is, you have to think in this way. Think about this. You're a spirit. You're walking with the dead, right? And you've had dozens of incarnations previously, and you're getting ready to come into a new incarnation. On that other side, you have guides, helpers, counselors, guardians, lots and lots and lots of people willing to help you and advise you about what lessons you will choose to learn for yourself in the next life. Now, I will say this. Most people bite off more than they can chew. They say, oh, I'll learn this, and they, because they've forgotten how hard it is to live on this planet, right? But nonetheless, the intention is good. You're going to learn all these wonderful lessons. So you then decide what knowledge you have acquired in previous lives that will be helpful to you in your future life. So if in this life you're going to just have ahead of you that's waiting for you, it's been decided that the path that will take, the optimum path that will take, as a general line, as a general avenue, it's not written in stone, it's all changeable, but as a general idea, you said, well, I've loved music in the past, so I'd like to have a lifetime that's in some way involved with music. And that's going to be the main theme, and you will have developed lots of other themes and things you want to learn in that life. But your main theme is that you want to be involved with music. So then you come down into this life, and I call it soul DNA, that thread of energy that comes with you that is your ongoing soul energy, and it carries with it basic instructions that you have learned in previous lives and that you believe will be valuable to you in this life to achieve the fulfillment of what you want to do. Entirely about you. It's not a reward and punishment system, and you have to choose it. So you could decide to, you know, be a heavy metal band person or be a concert pianist or be a singer or teach music, but you have decided that the theme of this music is going to be about life. So that's what you process with. That's what presents itself to you as opportunities in this life. So when you are living this life, instead of doing nothing, watching the television or complaining about everything, you have to look at your life, literally look at it as if you're standing back from it and say, wait a minute, what has been offered to this person in this lifetime? Because if it was offered to them, if it was an opportunity that presented itself to them, then they can be reasonably sure that that is part of their intent for lessons and learning in this lifetime. And so you follow that track throughout the years of your life. You observe yourself. You observe your life. You do your best to correct yourself and get right what you've got wrong.
For you.
Make the best of the opportunity.
For you,
this
that's
is
great.
For everybody.
That's
this
for you,
is
that's
for
great.
Everybody.
You say
no,
you remember other lifetimes. But the most
no,
people...
No, you do not. No. No. No, you don't know. Most people do not have any memory, nor is it necessary. What I didn't say they remembered their lifetime. I said you carry with you into the lifetime the information that you have learned in previous lives. It's instinctive to you. Like some people are wonderful mothers, their maternal instinct is overflowing. That's been something they've learned in the past. Some people are wonderful cooks. Some people are wonderful musicians. They are building on what they have already
learned.
But
the proviso
is
that must be a memory of that you have lived before.
It's soul memory. It's not brain memory.
It's soul memory. But most people don't even remember what they had for breakfast yesterday. So what can I say?
That's because they've chosen not to develop themselves.
Okay.
Maybe in other lives they didn't learn anything.
Okay.
Maybe they spent lifetime after lifetime never bothering to learn anything.
But the assumption is, your assumption, and that's great, wonderful, good, that most people live many, many, many lifetimes, that the soul incarnates in bodies 10 years from now, 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now. That's your assumption, and I can appreciate that.
No, that's not my assumption. That's never been my assumption, and that's what I've been telling you for as long as I've known you, Russell, that salvation is a do-it-yourself program and that you have to claim your immortality.
Okay.
And that the problem is that we're coming to the end of a cycle now
Okay.
When people are running out of reincarnational opportunity.
Okay.
And that's what I've been telling you.
And so when they run out, what happens? What happens with that person? What happens with that soul?
I don't know. I have no idea what will happen to them.
Okay.
I'm not the creator. All I know is that Christ tells them in the Bible, right, and in the New Testament, and I'm no bibliophile, you know that, but you are. Right, you're a pastor or were a pastor at one time in your life.
Well,
you sure know.
That.
So Christ, well, I'm saying that because you are just as capable of saying this to people, right, and have said it, and they obviously haven't listened, or else they wouldn't still be asking, right? People live as he tells them to live. They will become eternal, immortal beings. Their souls will go on to the next cycle of experience in this life, in life in this universe.
All right, in closing.
But he also tells them if they don't do as he says, they will die the second death.
Okay, in closing then, and I really appreciate you being here today, in closing, that you were telling us, those people unknowingly, uninformed, unaware, that you must somehow remember that your soul energy has...
No.
No? No?
Russell, you have never, ever heard me say, people must remember. I have never said that. I don't care whether they remember or not. What they have to do is pay attention and observe themselves and their lives.
Okay.
If there's something they need to remember, by doing that process of self-observation and attention, that will come into their minds as a thought, as an idea, as something. But no, whether they actually remember or not, whether they even believe in reincarnation or not, it's totally irrelevant.
I see.
What goes on with the soul is behind the scenes, right? It's not something, it's not a memory thing. Memory is in your brain. Memory is your physical brain. When you die, your brain dies just like everything else.
Okay.
So that kind of memory is irrelevant.
Okay, let me ask you this last question. When you return, what do you see your role as being when you come back again?
When I come back this next time?
Yes.
Well, I know what I'll be doing for a very long time. The planet is coming to the end of a cycle. There are going to be massive changes. I mean, major changes, upheavals, disruptions. There's a high, high probability, like a better than 80% probability, that at some point in the next year or two, we will lose most of the world's electronics.
Wow.
Most likely through EMP waves. Or terrorist action on electricity grids worldwide.
Oh, pause
and
on that.
When that happens...
Could you pause on that?
Well, when...
You are saying, if I understand you correctly, that we have just gone through this whole shutdown of the planet with that virus deal, right? Nobody expected that, ever. You couldn't even make that up. Now you're saying the whole planet is going to be shut down because they're going to lose... Internet, phones, communications.
Right, that's a very high probability.
Wow.
It's part of the, it can be two things. It can come from more than one source, right?
Uh-huh.
The most likely source is a rogue nation, say like North Korea, shooting off EMP high altitude bombs, you know, dirty bombs at high altitude, creating EMP waves. That's a high probability. The high probability is also a terrorist nation trying to take out another nation, likely America will be the first affected, taking out electric grids physically. And it takes years and years and years to rebuild electric transformers and set up new grids. So, I mean, the power is down. So there's a very high probability, very high. Estimated at least 80% or better.
You think that's going to happen?
The grids will go down.
But people.
This is what.
But the world will be in chaos.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So the other thing is a massive increase, which you would see, in civil unrest and basically bad activity all over the world, right? Just a really bad position. Now, I'm going to tell you something here, right? You have to bear with me with this.
All right.
This is what the high probability is of those who permanently, and I don't know about galactic federations or all those people, right? I'm not saying they're not out there, but I don't know them. I only know the ones that I know are sitting at computers observing what's going on and doing the mathematics, the calculations, and everything else. And this is a high probability for planet Earth. However, it's a race, it's a horse race to the gate, really. It really is. Because at the same time, and you've heard me talk about this before, because we are at the end of a grand cycle and the universe renews itself at this particular time, it expands as an expansion of the universe and this influx of light from the central core. Well, I was told just less than a week ago that this light, which has been coming in waves, like sound waves, since 1998 it began, is now visible as a visible, for want of a word, I'll say cloud, cloud of light. Let me say it that way. It is now visibly observable coming into our quadrant of the universe, right, way down here in the Milky Way. And if the cloud of light, and it will cover the whole Earth, if the cloud of light gets here, it will stop all that negative stuff because it will wipe it out. It will completely obliterate it. And so it's so intense, it will just, anything that's the wrong frequency, which is dark energy frequency, will simply get fried, be gone. It doesn't matter what it is, animals, people, plants, anything that is vibrating at that dark energy vibration level, of course, all the cabal, they will just disappear. They will be gone.
So basically, humanity is in trouble.
It's a race between this ball of light that's literally rolling towards the Earth right now as we speak, and apparently is now visible, and from higher up than we are, and the dark side, which is dragging everything down and causing all the bad things and the chaos. The great thing is that we have millions of people on this Earth, and they tell interesting stories about all this stuff they know, but that's not what's important. Their stories are not important. My stories are not important. Nobody's stories are important. What is important is that we, all of us, serve the light. We serve the source in some way or another, right? And because we are servants of the source, we act as magnets for the light. The more of us there are, the faster we pull this new light into our planet, into our system. Oh, gee, that nearly deafened me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Right? Yeah.
And so if we can get the light, if the people who work for the source can stand firm and continue to focus on drawing in the light, then there is a chance that the light might get here before the dark events occur. And that's the best we can hope for.
Okay.
It's what we should all be hoping for.
All right.
But as individuals, we need to work on ourselves.
All right. Well, we've been here for past 30 minutes, but I really appreciate, once again, you being with us to give us direction, guidance, and helping us to understand what's on the table here. Okay? So thank you,
Russell.
And
thank you. Bye-bye now.
All right. You have a good one now. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, that's Jillian, and she's been with us before, and she's, you know, guiding and directing us to think differently. So have a good one. Thanks very much for listening to Blog Talk Radio, lightsinthenight.org.